sort of start is understanding and educating people on what the value of it is, how to measure it, and what your time frames are to see return on investment. Because it's about long-term, deep change and transformation, not quick and dirty fixes.
Well, welcome back to the Promise Brand Podcast, everybody. I'm excited this year because we're taking a focus, looking a little bit more in depth with brand and with people. What does brand have an effect on our people? And, you know, getting into this kind of conversation, I recently connected with an amazing new friend of mine on the other side of the world named Ali Uren, who is the founder of a great organization called Kickstart. She's got over 20 years of experience in really helping others build organizational development. And so I see a lot of correlation between organizational development and what we're doing today in brand and beyond. And so without any further ado, I welcome to the podcast Miss Ali Uren. Ali, how are you doing down under today?
I'm going very, very well. Thank you for that introduction, Luke. You can hear my Australian tones, my dogset tones, huh?
I love
it. Good to be with you.
I love it. I love it. This is cool. We've jumped around the world to make this conversation happen. But you know what's interesting is that although here I am in the U.S., you're in Australia, you work a lot with Australian-based companies, you've worked with a lot of U.S.-based companies, people aren't much different around the world when we break it down as far as organizational development goes, right? There's not a lot of cross-country cultural difference, right?
No. And even sometimes even across roles, right? Like we think that people hold different roles. They're different people wanting different things and motivated by something different. And you know, I've worked with really diverse people and they're not. They're not really, depending on, you know, even where they sit in the office or what title they have, they're intrinsically the same in terms of what they're motivated by and what they value. Mm-hmm. So yeah, geography doesn't separate us probably as much as we think it does.
Sometimes. Yeah. So you've spent years working on what's called organizational development. Mm. Now, for the people in brand and marketing, can you just give us an overview? Mm. What exactly are we talking about when we're talking about organizational development?
Sure. And look, different people could have different definitions. But for me, when I think about it, I'm looking at every component that influences that organizational reality and that workplace reality. So I'm looking at things too like comms, strategy, commercial goals, learning and development and learning and growth, talent development. So that means succession planning at the end-to-end. The employee experience, looking at the change and transformation piece. So it's really all those connected parts that influence how a business is going to take itself out into the world, how it achieves commercial goals and how it develops its people and the environments that it creates to do that. So yeah. I don't ever look at it as separate, like change management and then learning development, then marketing, then commercial. Mm-hmm. It's connecting those pieces.
Yeah.
Because they all affect one another and all impact on one another.
Right.
So,
yeah. One of the, you know, as I've been in the world of brand strategy and brand development, one of the things that it's forced me into, maybe with a background in psychology, it's kind of forced me into this place of what's called employer branding, which looks very much so at how are we internally operating and giving our employees the best place to grow, which, you know, from talking with you, really dovetails into what organizational development really helps support. You often work with teams at the C-suite level, however, not exclusively, but oftentimes you start there. For you, what is that C-suite level growth matter to the work that you do?
They need to understand it because they're also going to have to build capability at times in their own people. And if we don't have buy-in understanding at C-suite around what it is, how we're going to get there, what it's going to take, then you really are going to be, and I've been there where that has not always been the case, and that's going to make it difficult as well too. So you have to start there, and you've got to start at the CEO level too, right?
Right.
You have to bring the right people around that table early on. And you wouldn't, I think sometimes, unfortunately, the CEO is outside of those discussions, and I think it's incredibly important that we bring them in. Mm-hmm. It's vital. Yeah.
When someone is going through some kind of struggle, you know, the work you're doing, I think, is very, it's powerful. What often is a C-suite level team struggling with that makes it the right situation for someone like you to come in?
Yeah. Look, it could be a number of different things, but I think a lot of the time that human connectedness piece, that actually bringing people together, particularly if you've got even teams that are on site together, but particularly now with more of a dispersed team situation as well, building those connections, right? Building human connections and getting people to be engaged and being able to deliver projects collectively and having a skill set, because that is an acquired skill set. I do find that we will see that there's a lack of capability in that sort of C-suite management level. And what they're wanting to be able to do is to be able to rewire those relationships and those roles so that they're able to take on, you know, really the work that they're employed to do, which is some of that higher level strategic planning, forward thinking, more entrepreneurial sort of work. So that's where that collective OD model or approach that I've created, they will be able to really benefit from that.
And a lot of the times people are talking about kind of the employee value proposition. You and I have talked about this, you know, commonly seen in the employer branding space is EVP. And, you know, again, that's that 10-year, it's kind of the what is the experience the employee's having? What's the human connection element? But what is a question that you often ask in those spaces to these teams to kind of start them off in the process?
Yeah. So remember, I think when you and I have talked in the past too, we've talked about that in emotional proposition as part of it as well too. So the emotional piece is really big to be able to define that, because when you can define that with clarity, you'll then be able to create that employee experience. C-suite will come to me and say, oh, we're not seeing changes in people and they've gone through training. There's two questions I always ask to get this moving. One is, what resources are you providing and fully leverage that learning? And what type of environment are you creating and providing that allows people to play with knowledge, right? And those two questions are really critical.
Yeah.
And they're like a real reset, right? They get people, they stop people, you know, to really think about what their role needs to be in that. And it's always done with love and consideration. And normally, you know, and understanding of one another before we get to that point. But that is important. That is important that there is ownership from leadership as well too. In this work, for it to have the impact that it can have.
Right. Yeah, it makes me really curious because, you know, we're in an economy right now, kind of globally, where we're seeing a lot of layoffs, and we're seeing a lot of people either, you know, really connected to their brands, they're connected to the companies they're working at, or people just destroying brands because of, you know, mass layoffs. I can't remember the name of the company, but I just saw one today, news of one today, where the CEO, large global company, said, we're not doing any layoffs. In fact, I'm taking a cut. Some of our C-suite is taking a cut in salary so we can keep paying our people. As far as retention goes in a world, you know, of the past like 5 years, especially with massive layoffs, how should we go about retention differently from an organizational development model?
Yeah, that's an interesting question and a big one as well too. And, you know, I've always been a big believer that you're not going to keep people forever, nor should you. People will move on and outgrow, and you wish them well, and that is what is best for people, to grow. But I think what we want to do is, rather than a retention mindset, a development mindset. And I talk a lot about that in my work, so that we're not retaining, we're developing. And I think for me it is about having really robust learning processes, systems, resources, environments from end to end. When people come in, there's a really exciting experience around the L&D piece, and what that looks looks like, both within the company and beyond. And I think we need to just say, hey, you might not be here forever because you may leave, things will happen, but while we're here, we're going to absolutely leverage this opportunity. So that, as I said, let's not just think about retention, let's think about development, because when we come from that perspective and design the organisations around that, people are going to want to stay anyway, or stay longer, right? And give more and connect more.
Yeah.
And that's why I never use the word retention in my work. I'll use the term, you know, development. It's the learning and development piece. So you have to look at, you can't just expect people to stay. What are they staying for, right? Like, what is the offer there? How do you curate these relationships? And it takes work and it takes intention from both sides. But we don't, a lot of the time, have those environments in place to be able to nurture those relationships. And I think that that is certainly, from what I've seen in my own experience, when we change that, we start to get a different outcome around the retention piece. And we've seen that some pretty far-flung parts of the world that were struggling to deliver on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, these are the kinds of problems that many times C-suite is thinking about. It's bottom line. It's where are the dollars coming in and out? And what does that profit look like months down the line? And so are you attempting to in one way, you know, considering many others, move C-suite from a money only problem focused to a, hey, let's actually get back to the basics and focus on the human element? Like is that a problem you're trying to fight sort of in culture? The fact that people are more worried about revenue than they are people?
I don't realize that the two are intrinsically connected. Right? So if you get the people sorted, then the commercial side will also be looking healthy as well too, right? So we've seen that. So you can't separate the two out. And I think when people are doing this work, there's return on investment, so ROE, which is return on education. So, you know, we haven't done very well normally around that because we don't think you can measure it, or we don't think you can measure impact, but you can, right?
Right.
So I think what we need to be focusing on is recalibrating how people, what's a fair and reasonable expectation, Luke, when you're doing this work? How quick is it going to be for you to actually see a return on that investment, right?
Right.
And so we need to do some work on the reasonable, right? Because it's not quick. This is not a quick and dirty.
Yeah.
Right? It's a long-term impact and outcome that will have commercial outcome as well as people outcome, but it's not a five-minute job. It is about recalibrating people's expectations around it and then actually getting them to be able to measure it, right? Because if you could measure it, then you wouldn't say, oh, well, we don't get much back on it. But people don't know how to measure it, right?
Yeah.
So that's where we've got to start, is understanding and educating people on what the value of it is, how to measure it, and what your time frames are to see return on investment.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's about long-term, deep change and transformation, not quick and dirty fixes.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's what, and I mean, I've got lots of anecdotes and stories and examples around that where people want quick wins, right?
Yeah.
And it's not, we're not selling hamburgers, we're dealing with humans. Well, it's, and quite, like, humans are complex, right?
And, it, and it's like wanting your newborn baby to walk day three with your employee development, right? So, well, it makes
sense. Right.
So think about it, right? Yeah, right. It's often what we do with our teams. We you know, these are newborn babies and we want them to be, you know, hitting home runs in their work without putting in that time and effort. So what are you using then, if we're not talking about, you know, maybe there's revenue that we could, you know, point to at the end of the day, but what kind of measurements and metrics are you utilizing during the time with your teams to help them see progress? And because that's important, right? We want to see the progress. What progress
absolutely
matters to them during that process?
The There's a lot, and it will differ, and we'll go through a couple, and there's some actually on my LinkedIn profile if people want to see why people engage, what's the problems and challenges, and what outcomes and impacts. So I'd encourage people to go and visit that, because it's about a four-page document. So there's a lot in there which I share. But it will always come off of, so I just want to say this, that the problems or the challenges that people are working on, because they're two different things, problems and challenges, will be driven from what has been uncovered in the innovation capability review. And that's a piece of work that is done together collectively early on to work out what the actual outcomes and impacts are against the OD strategic goals, and then what the skill gaps, threats and risks are to delivering on that. Yeah. So it could be, for example, I'm just going to give you one example. One example, and it had a lot of things sitting behind it, was brand reputation, actually, Luke. So talking to the brand man, this is a really good example, where they had to change and rewrite a different story in the market because it had been damaged through some questionable behaviour. They had to recalibrate the brand and the story to be able to attract different talent, because the business was at risk. It was at risk. So for them, they were wanting to achieve a number of things. Yes, there was a commercial goal, but they wanted to mix and change the type of people that were coming to work for their organisation and how they were going to do that. So we could measure, just let me give you that example, we could measure the type of people that were applying, how they were engaging, the type of service that was being delivered, how long they stayed for, because it was in a very isolated part of Australia, so it was easy to sort of track that. But the quality of candidates, it was not a simple, gig. There was a lot of social and environmental factors at play too, as you can imagine. So for them it was, we want money in the bank, but we want the right people. We want healthy people. We want people that are connected to the mission. We want people that want to undertake further study. We want to be known as a leader in our field and own a category, which they were in terms of sustainable visitor economy. So we could actually measure. I know I'm going off here, but, you know, the metrics at those points from both hard and fast, both hard and fast financial data, but also changes in people's behaviour and attitude and lifestyle choices. Because that was particularly relevant, right, to this client, and mental wellbeing. So we could track how people showed up, right? That's the behavioural piece and the impact piece around how they would turn up and how they would connect, how they would engage business.
Well, and this is...
That's... So they were very clear, Luke. It was going to be holistic. It was never one thing. And that's important to note. It's never just one thing. There are many things that have to happen and feed into one another to get the desired outcome and impact.
If there's a shift you're talking about subtly here, where, businesses should make money. They're going to make money. It's going to be great. But we're focusing on just human development within business. Business is, you know, this is a workplace, is an opportunity for someone who invests sometimes 40 plus hours a week of their life, and sometimes 40 to 50 years doing it. Not with their family, not with, you know, their life, not with their own development. And so you're kind of, with the work you're doing, you're very much posing a question. Well, what if we used work to build our people?
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it. I'm going to take that. I'm going to take that one, Luke.
There you go. You're welcome.
But they are. But what if we, it's of goodness and of development?
You know, the world might change.
What are we doing, right? And that's how I use it. And that's how organisations, that's why they work with me and take that collective model to share some of that influence, right? Like, you have to have people own it. You have to have people be able to design it.
Right.
And I think I might have said it to you before. This is not about me coming back in again and fixing it. This is about the teams owning
right.
the outcomes and the impact. Not expert, but it's not for me to have to fix it, right? And that's the big difference in this. Mm-hmm. If I could say, you know, it's one of the things I took away from my postgraduate studies many years ago, ownership. As part of change and development,
yeah.
people have to be able to have a say in what the future is going to look like.
Yeah.
They might not be able to determine the outcome. Like, you know, if you're going to be made redundant, you'll be made redundant. But it's the process of how you get there and your involvement in what the future can look like. And that's a discussion for another day because I've done some interesting work in that space. Yeah. But, yeah, ownership yeah. always, always. How do I involve people?
Right.
In this, in a genuine way.
Yeah.
So they determine that.
This is it's a powerful thing because, you know, you as a business at Kickstart, you're not just talking about how do we as a brand create recurring revenue models, which, you know, eventually you could, but you're saying, hey, we're going to invest a ton of time and effort on our, in wealth of knowledge on these people to make them better so they can be better within their organization. Yeah. And so to me,
right.
from a brand side, you know, that's building radical change with inside brands that then build external change. You know, we've talked a lot about this before. It's the only place that we can begin and make that change. For you, we'll wrap up with a couple more questions here, but what has maybe been your favorite experience within this work, seeing it play out for yourself?
Yeah, wow. Look, there's two, but one that I'll mention that was pretty revolutionary as well was when I worked on and designed the redundancy factory closure for Coca-Cola in South Australia. And that was massive. That factory had been there for 50 years. And they were shutting the manufacturing operations. Mm. And it had been a pivotal part of the community. So that, for me, there's a lot I can choose from, but that one, it was a year project. It was a big piece of work.
Yeah.
But that did change the game in how organisations were socially responsible when they made people redundant, when they said, this is no longer going to be your place of work. Yeah, it was always a project that just sticks with me because That's of those powerful. Reasons as well too.
Yeah.
It just delivered. It went to some new courageous places that traditional career services wouldn't dare tread. And that's why it worked.
Yeah.
But I've got an article I can share with you on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that one was good because that was a big one. And lots of people were looking at it. You know, they really were. Because other big brands had done in that state when they closed, including, you know, General Motors, Holden,
right.
Mitsubishi. They took a traditional path.
Easy way out.
The figures don't line. It didn't work, right? So they wanted to do something. And when you work with big brands like Coca-Cola, they're not there to do things that don't work. So, yeah, it did. And I loved that. And there's still friendships and connections made, a couple of years later.
That's
and those
powerful.
Guys have gone on to go on and get other gigs, right? So this wasn't just the gig they got after Coca-Cola. They've now gone on because they've got that entrepreneurial mindset and resource to keep finding opportunities. It's the gift that keeps giving, Luke.
Right.
Right. You can't take it out of someone's head. Once they know it and they know how to use it, it's there, right? Yeah. And they can make it malleable and they rework it, right? But, they're continually, as they need to, they can draw on it. It doesn't have a time limit. And they continue, because I still keep in touch with many of them.
Yeah.
Drive those opportunities forward. So that's that ownership piece. I love it. I get fired up.
I love it, Ali. I love it. As you, as we wrap up here, and you think about what's going on in the culture globally or just within Australia, what's a company, and maybe one you've worked with, one you haven't worked with, but what's a company that you see that has a lot of eyes on it right now that you can tell they've invested in organizational development? I'm putting you on the spot to think about this, but you know, there's plenty of companies that people are they're crapping on them, you know, for lack of better words, because they're making these moves and these decisions. And we talked about layoffs or the hiring, or board firing a CEO. And so I'd love to see on the positive from your kind of wisdom and perspective and organizational background, who do you see out there and you could just tell, yeah, these guys are doing it. They're doing the work.
Look, you have put me on the spot, Luke, but that's okay. Look, I would say, and it's a big company, Atlassian, right? Like, so they're big, right? Like, they're a big Australian tech company. But what I like about what they're doing, and I know they're big and they've got deep pockets, but it doesn't matter. You still got to, you know, have to do this.
Right.
You know, during COVID, the CEO's gotten buses, went out to regional Australia and recruited, so people could work remotely. So they're doing a lot of work at the moment to remove roadblocks to people that are talented but that live out in regions, right?
Yeah.
And to take away those roadblocks. So I think it's about remote work and dispersed teams. I think they're doing a lot of good work within that. And I think for me personally, we need to respectfully push back on some of the narratives being put out there around remote work, because I've worked largely remotely since 2017.
Yeah.
And it does work. But you need to have the recipe right. The ingredients have to be right, because if you've got any sort of shortcomings or any failings don't exist, and you've got that from a team that looks at one another every day in the same location, that will be magnified out to regions when you're not sitting in the same place eyeballing one another. So I would say Atlassian, off the top of my head, are doing some really big, and I think they're doing some great work, and I think in their research, because they've got the name and the resources around that, will actually challenge what we believe is possible, right? That's ultimately why we do what we do, is to bring a different reality to our work. So
powerful.
That's where I'd go.
Powerful. Ali Uren, founder of Kickstart, where can people, I know you have a wealth of knowledge, so where can people find your resources, your education? Where can people get connected with you?
So you'll find I post regularly on LinkedIn. So if you put my name in, Ali Uren, you'll find my profile. Go and follow me, connect in. Lots of goodness there. And at the website, kickstart.com, KIKSTART.com. A lot of resources, blogs, video, and also the different ways that we could partner together to make it a different. Luke, so thank you so much too for having me.
I love it. Thank you so much, Ali. I appreciate it.